Сюда кому не вам. Уянадьяма кунгадаканая хунгвэкэм тэткэ тэту вачанна санна дэчан танфандао. May the merit from this practice be shared with all beings everywhere. May this discipline and all sentient beings fully realize their potential and their path to the Buddhahood. May the steps that we take be with good deeds that we make. The ground is hard and the water is very deep. May this merit be what will not make us weep. Sātu, Amitabha, Asidabha. And don't forget to share and radiate that love, that moment of peace with everybody in the room. There's a lot of things that we could be doing, but we're not. And today we're here to share with each other, be with each other in oneness. We're here today to learn and share with each other and be what sometimes I feel the world does not want us to be. So we are the lucky few. Don't forget to take that moment and share that as soon as we leave this place. Don't think that meditation stops just because there was a bell in a badly chanted prayer. Don't forget to take that and be on your way and share it with the people outside, because they really need it. They really, really need your light, your love, your compassion, your kindness. Yesterday we were talking about a topic, which is urgency in applying the Dharma. What we know of the Dharma, does it mean you need to be a scholar? Does it mean you need to be a meditation master? What you know from the Dharma, to apply it now, because there is something that we are consumed by, is this idea of time, that we have time. No, time has you. Time has us. We don't have time. We spoke about the urgency to apply the practice at the moment and don't procrastinate. How our health and our situations and our distractions make us feel that we have all the time in the world. They make us feel that we sometimes are even invincible, which is a big misunderstanding. And time kind of works with this false temporary idea of happiness that we kind of indulge in from time to time. You ever notice when you feel happy, you kind of let the Trojan horse ride into your citadel because you're happy, and then you regret it later? It's happened to me many times. I feel ecstatically happy, and I don't check the things that I'm thinking about, speaking about, what I'm acting about. So today we're going to talk again, but this time following yesterday's talk, we will talk about the idea of renunciation. What is that? What does that mean for us to be renunciates? And does renunciation just mean I need to take my things and throw them out the window? You see, a lot of people inside the monasteries, at least inside, you know, I live in Asia at the moment, the new, freshly monks and nuns, they tell about how they took all their money, they took all their things, they gave it all away. And then they regret it later. Okay, when you're supposed to renunciate, you're supposed to renunciate in a way that doesn't make you feel regret. Because it's gonna destroy your practice later on. Because you're gonna sit there and ruminate about why did I give that away when I could have been using it now. So renunciation does take a level of wisdom. Renunciation does take a level of practice. Renunciation doesn't start by giving away your materials. It starts by making space in your mind and understanding its importance inside your heart. And is it something, when I am practicing the art of renunciation, is it something that is causing me negative karma? Is it causing me something that is moving me closer towards positive karma? It doesn't mean you're not allowed to have things. It means you're not supposed to be attached to these things that are causing you to be greedy, causing you to feel arrogant, causing you to feel better than somebody else, causing you to feel that I cannot live without this object. You sit and meditate, and have you noticed that sometimes you sit and meditate, and before the meditation starts, I got to get my beads, I got to get my robe, I got to light the incense, got to put the cat away, got to do this, got to do that, got to do this, this, this. And by the time you sit down in meditation, we're just passed out. You burnt up all your energy on those things that control you. You would actually think that those things that you have are helping your life, they've imprisoned you now. So the real idea of renunciation is not just about things, it's about not being controlled, conflicted about the things when they're not present. Just like anything else in life, we have to make space for it, make time for it. You have to kind of sit there and mentally gear yourself and prepare for it. Happened to me. Sitting in meditation and everything's going good for 5 minutes, and then I start having visions of things that, oh, you know what? I forgot to do this and I forgot to do that. Well, how am I supposed to get to these levels of meditative bliss if I'm always thinking about something else that I can add to the confusion? How many pairs of socks do we need? My grandma gives me a lot of socks. So it isn't just about letting go of sensual pleasures and desires. It's letting go of the things that our heart is palpitating over, constantly beating over, that don't really serve you your greater purpose. Letting go of sense pleasures and ego-driven habits to develop deep peace and concentration. We know that concentration is the pinnacle of the meditative practice. Samatha. It is called samatha. We're supposed to be delighting in peace and tranquility. But as you can see, because of our misconception, wrong view, we kind of push those things away. It's really easy that we push them away. We're supposed to be straightforward and ongoing with the space that we have made for tranquility and peace in our life, and making it bigger, not just forward, left, right, center, below and above, and behind. But everything we keep accepting into our lives that has small purpose, it takes and eats away from our space of tranquility. Do you know that the more space and peace that we open up our life is, that is a peace we could share with somebody else? We could take that and give that to somebody else. That's more fulfilling. That is more in line of long-lasting happiness, not temporary happiness. I get one bead, I get tired of that, I want to buy another one. And after I get tired of that one, I buy another one. But it's more fulfilling, it's more happiness, it's more tranquil, it's more in line with liberation, knowing that I made one person happy and they spread it to somebody else and they spread it to somebody else. Now that is fulfillment. That feels good. It feels better than being greedy. It feels better than getting a second, third, fourth, fifth car. That feels better than the third burrito that I ate last night. We all have our vices, but we can do better because we are people that strive to do better, or we wouldn't even be here now. We would not be here right now. The bodhisattva path or practice is a renunciate, not just external pleasure, but also self-centered liberation, choosing instead to work for the enlightenment of all beings, not just human-to-human contact. We are choosing this path to help all beings, all sentient beings, whether they be the forest, a tree, an ant, it doesn't matter. We're choosing this path to help everyone. Knowing our place inside nature, knowing our place inside the environment, we chose to live a life of obtaining happiness so other beings can be happy, so they can radiate and we can radiate the same love that they give us. I once heard a quote that said, radiate your love or boundless happiness. Just like a tree gives shade to the man that has an axe that has sworn to cut it down. I don't know about you, but that made a lot of sense. It made a big impression on me. There was a Dhammapada verse, which I really love. And if some of you who are unfamiliar with the Dhammapada, it is a book that is talking about the Buddha's parables. It is written like a poetic form. It is very, might be one of the most popular books, but it's something that inspired my life. And you can actually pocket carry this book called the Dhammapada for some of you who are maybe not familiar with it. But there's a verse 290 that says, if by giving up a lesser happiness one may behold a greater happiness, let the wise person give up the lesser, having seen the greater. And we also spoke about that yesterday, about acknowledging and realizing between good and what is better, and between bad and worse. We know between good and bad. We know which one we're supposed to pick. We're supposed to go towards what is wholesome, what is good, not what is unjust and unright. That's easy we can understand that. But we spoke about yesterday, again reiterating the point that going through what is good and better is very difficult. Picking between what is worse, what is bad and worse is very difficult. Let me see here. I can't see that well today. Now, at the heart of human suffering is a restless mind, always concocting ideas, thinking that you need to think about these ideas when you don't. Your mind is like a TV show. It's like, remember we sit there with the clicker on grandma's couch clicking the channel? That's exactly what the mind does to you. You don't have to indulge in these thoughts. If you get rid of one, another one comes. You get rid of that one, another one comes. Another one. Until you participate and latch on to that idea and think that it's going to entertain you or bring you somewhere. If you're going to be using your brain, because it's always going to, that's its function, is to be thinking and throwing out ideas. If you're going to think about something that is going to project you and put you in a place that is alleviating the pain, is going to put you in a mindset that is going to bring you closer to liberation and the ending of the sufferings that we have. we can do better by understanding the functions of this mind that we have that is constantly craving for some type of attention. Mentally throwing temper tantrums just because you don't want to think about an idea. I've had it many times sitting in meditation when I sit there and I'm watching the Muppet Show and all these ideas come. And when you stop clinging to them, when you stop paying attention to them, what does the mind do? It says, you don't want to pay attention to me? I'm going to put you to sleep. It's exactly what it says. You don't want to listen to me? I'm going to hit the kill switch and put you to sleep. So if you are going to be using your thoughts, if you are going to be using your mind, which is not a bad thing, think of something that is going to bring you closer to happiness and start to subtract. What I used to do was I would think about myself in a place. For example, I think about a temple. After I thought about myself inside of the temple, what am I doing there? What am I wearing? Where am I sitting at? Start to get yourself and start to subtract. If I'm sitting, how am I sitting? Am I sitting in front of the Buddha? Am I sitting at the waterfall? Am I sitting in the river? Then I start to go deeper more. What color am I wearing? Can I smell the flowers? Is there anybody near me? And start to keep going until you're just finally sitting there. You're sitting at this place and everything else kind of goes away and you'll go deeper inside your meditation. You go deeper in your meditation, your awareness, and your concentration becomes stronger. So I like to use the art of subtraction. Amitabha. The endless cycle of craving, which we call tanha. Okay, the endless cycle of craving, which you call tanha, this restless pursuit is explained through the Pali language, which is tanha or chanda. Chanda is that the desireful craving. Sensory, especially for sensory pleasures. Those things that corrupt men from all traditions, from all spiritual traditions. Abrahamic faith all the way down. There's a Dhammapada verse where I thought was really interesting that says, not by a shower of gold coins does contentment rise in sexual, sensual pleasures. Of little sweetness and painful are sensual pleasures. The wise ones understand this. Now, what does wise one mean inside this verse? It doesn't mean somebody who knows something from a book. People always misunderstand what wisdom really truly means. It doesn't mean somebody who memorized lexicons or memorized the Encyclopedia Britannica or whatever book were. That's a person who knows something. It's not a person who's wise. It doesn't mean that you're not supposed to read. It doesn't mean you're not supposed to, you know, be brushed up on information. But wisdom is the art how to detach and break free from the cycle of suffering, the repeated cycle of suffering that made your karma go downwards. The purpose of our path is to liberate, not to just feel good in our meditation. If you want to just feel good, go to a baseball game. You want to just feel good, go to an amusement park. Meditation is stronger, it is deeper than just feeling something. There's a lot of people outside right now feeling things that are probably not good for them, but that doesn't mean they're meditating. The purpose of our meditation is to break free from these ideas and concepts that don't serve our purpose anymore. We're supposed to be the light in the world. Not just feel it, you're going to be that light. Bring the Buddha outside of you. You all have it, I have it, you have it. Bring the Buddha out so therefore people can have something to look forward to. We also spoke yesterday about titles. And a lot of us get stuck on titles and forget about the message. The Lord Buddha never said, because I didn't say it, it is not Dharma. Never said that. Truth will always be truth. Period. So whatever message it is that is in line with the Four Noble Truths, the Eightfold Path, that this is something that we can attest to. Whatever, what book it comes from, whatever, it doesn't matter. We're not clinging to this concept of a title. A door doesn't know it's a door. A dog doesn't know it's a dog. It just is. We're the ones who give it these funny little goofy names. There's something that is in line with what we're talking about from another spiritual path. Ecclesiastes is talking about the art of renunciation. It says, I denied myself nothing. My eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my labor. Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done, everything was meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Chasing after the wind. A lot of us chase after the wind. I chase the wind. I'm guilty of that too. Thinking that these titles, these jobs, these things are going to save you from mental rot. No, they don't. You have to prepare yourself to get rid of these things that don't really mean much when we talk about liberating from these ideas in this ego world. If you want to practice this further, you want to apply this further, all you need to go is get a tent and go camping out in the woods that aren't far here and start to hear them coyotes. Coyotes and a couple ruffling in the bushes, and you really start to realize, wait a minute, my degree is not going to help me from this little hungry animal in the bushes. It is not going to help me from that. It is very important that we use the means that we have to humble ourselves, to realize that our purpose on this world is not to indulge. Our purpose in this realm of existence is not to indulge, but to utilize the skills we have to help our neighbor. Now, it doesn't mean to be foolish. Doesn't mean to go help somebody and he comes around and harms us. You do have to have wisdom in what you're doing. You do have to have a little bit of tact and skill. But it does mean we don't sit there and indulge and play in this world like we're going to live forever. We have to refuse and renunciate the ideas that are causing us to suffer. Renunciate the ideas that cause us to fail. Breaking free from the cycle of distraction and materialism. I noticed that in the first part of my development of practice, being in Cambodia for some time, is that I was still heavily attracted and attached to my former lifestyle and my habits. I needed Wi-Fi all the time, which was hard to get in the middle of a jungle on the mountain. I needed new clothes, new shoes, until I found out it is extremely difficult to travel from place to place with a backpack full of heavy robes. It hurts my back, and it was no purpose of these ideas and concepts that I had in my mind thinking they're going to help me out with my practice. It weighed me down. But as soon as I start to leave them, my meditation got better. When you go on Tudong practice, which is the art, or which is the wandering monk status, like they would do in Thailand, we would all start out with a bunch of everything. Solar panel, battery chargers. Some of us have little cooking tools, you know, a little propane. We'd all have these bags full of stuff. By the time you start your walking, and by the time you're done, your bag is pretty much empty. You dump everything out. You just don't need it anymore. It serves no purpose. It's heavy. And you're saying, why did I bring this in the first place? Because we sit there and entertain the thoughts of our mind. We're watching the wrong channel inside of our mind. And we believed it. And it laughed at us. All this stuff we had to dump out and throw it. Every time we go to a new temple, we wash our clothes inside the river. Took our robes. We didn't have any soap. He just let it soak in the river. Why would I need to pack my bag full of 3 packs of Top Ramen? Why would I need to do that? So scared. I have a lot of fear inside of our mind to let go of these things. So they actually controlled us. But it was a good training because now we're able to see how the mind can play games on you, using your fears to have you crave after more and more and more. I forgot how many. 10:30? Okay, good. Did you want to do question and answer also? Before 10:30, right? Just checking. Sorry, guys. I just really hope that we are going to be an element in developing mindfulness, disattachment, love, and kindness in this city. Seattle is beautiful. And I'm telling you that from the outside because I haven't lived here in so many years. We can't allow nonsense that is happening in this city to be overshadowed by the love that's in this room. This is a powerful room. Don't think it is not. We are a room full of people that understand the true nature of reality, that everything is empty of something. It's empty. Skin, all these things, these components don't mean anything. It's our deeds, our actions, and our thoughts that mean everything. Not a skin color, not a hair texture. That's nothing. It doesn't mean anything. Bless this world, bless this city, with the true knowledge of love and compassion that we've learned. They're dying for it outside. Literally dying for it. They think that nobody loves them. No, you do have love. And I'm going to show it to you today. If I can't say it to you, at least radiate that love to you by standing next to you. Remember, some people are visual learners. Some of us are learned by speech. Some of us are very visual learners. And they just see you and they know you are a source of refuge. Where does our refuge come from? It comes from the Buddha. It comes from having compassion in our heart. It comes from sharing merit. It comes from the space that we are tired of hiding this love and compassion that we have to make those who are uncomfortable with it, happy. You're going to get this love. Whether you like it or not, you're going to get warmth. If you're cold, get ready to be warmed up. There's no choice. This is how we preserve the city. This is how we preserve ourselves. This is how we show people the way forward. And with that being said, it is about 2 minutes to 10. We'll say 30 minutes for question and answer. And if there's something that I said that goes against the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha, the Arahant, or the Bodhisattva path, forget everything I said. Dump it. Go back to the text. Go back to the masters. Go back to the meditation masters and stick firmly to them. So with that be said, Namo Bangshu Tekka Moni Phak, Amitabha, Amitabha, Amitabha.